It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here together in the studio as usual this morning. And it is a glorious day outside.
It is so beautiful right now.
It just doesn't get much better than this. So, and if you're going to go out in your car and turn the radio on so you can listen to us. Otherwise, go out at 11 when we're done. How's that?
There you go.
Or if you really have to miss the show, always remember that you can go to VanWeeFinancial.com, and we have every show posted, what, Tuesday or so?
Monday.
Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't tell anybody this, but we take the commercials out, so it's really easy to listen to. But there's nothing like the live show, and I say that for many reasons, and they're all true. Because what's more fun than listening to a radio show that already happened? Listening to one that's happening and participating. And if you want to do that, just pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255. The regulars, welcome back. You're, of course, the reason we do this every week and have been for, we're in the second half of our eighth year now on air, which is very hard to believe the way time flies. Watching Adam's kids grow up, you can tell. I remember a couple times when they were in the studio a few years ago when they could hardly look up over the bench that we're sitting at. And nowadays, they are slightly taller than that. Anyway, if you're new to the show and found it by accident or if somebody told you or if we demanded that you listen or anything like that, try to stick around for the hour because we promise you you'll learn something. But along the way, if anything triggers a question or if you have a question ready to go, just pick up the phone and call us and we'll put you right to the front. And if any of you are too shy to do that, you can always reach us through our website at info@vanweefinancial.com. And Adam will pick that up and we'll get an answer out as soon as possible, even if it takes till next week's show. All right, that said, another wild and woolly week. It's kind of hard to describe. We are all occasionally guilty of something that we preach over and over and over again. And that is representing the stock market by using the Dow. It's a terrible, terrible way to do it.
The worst.
Yeah. It's only 30 stocks, and they're very large. And that is not really the market. I plead guilty. I very often refer to the market. Well, how was the market today? It was up 500. Mm-hmm. Well, that means the Dow was up 500. Well, this week, the Dow was up, but the market wasn't.
Nope. It was the S&P was down. The NASDAQ was down. In fact, the Dow actually had a nice week. It was up 1.2%. How it got there wasn't exactly a straight line.
I have a trivia question on that one coming up.
Yeah, and then, but the NASDAQ had a horrible week, down 3.1%. The S&P was down 1.6%. All interest rate driven once again. And you can see that in the results. The bigger the company, the less the effect. The growth stocks in the NASDAQ all got hammered. It's been a frustrating year. It continues to be a frustrating year. I don't see it changing per se. But the most interesting thing that happened this week was Thursday. So we got a CPI report that came and showed that core CPI hit a four-decade high last month.
And core means they take out the volatile sectors of food and energy.
Mm-hmm. And the immediate reaction was that the futures dropped off a cliff. They were actually up pretty solidly.
Up about 300, and they were down about 300 in under 15 seconds. Yeah. Way under 15
yeah.
seconds.
And I think then they dropped to 400 or 500 down, and the market opened, and that's what happened. The market dropped about 400-ish points. And then all of a sudden, some buying started and the market started to creep up. And we were down 2% that morning. And then by the close in the afternoon, we were up more than 2%. It was a really remarkable swing, I believe, encompassing more than 1,200 Dow points or something
right.
like that. Mm-hmm. Really remarkable, considering that the news was pretty horrible that morning. Yeah, so that was really hard to explain. I saw a lot of people and a lot of my peers trying to explain that, and no one had a real good answer.
I can't
answer.
Explain it.
No, it was a little bit bizarre.
I'll tell you one thing. If you're the kind that chases those vast and quick moves in the market, You could have lost your shirt on that day.
Oh, man. If you reacted to the CPI news and sold pre-market to sell at the open, you got, I mean, you missed out on a big, big gain that day.
Yeah, and you know what? If that happened to you and you call in, expect anything except sympathy.
Yeah, well, I'll have a little sympathy. I understand. It's been a tough year, and then something like that, it just piles on. And this is why we don't trade. This is why we invest for long term. The good thing about this particular wild swing like that is that our favorite research company did a little bit of a blurb about when these things happen, and for the most part, they happen near the end of a long downturn. Not at the end, but near the end. So what that means is that if history repeats itself in this case, we could be somewhat near to the end of this. And honestly, there's a lot of things right now that are saying we could be somewhat near the end of this, but we don't know.
And there's a group of people that say, no, we're not.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're the Federal Reserve Board.
Well, there's a lot more than that. I think individual investors are also saying that the bearish sentiment levels would concur with that. And
good news in my book.
There's quite a few banks that are coming out with things saying we're not near the end of this too. So it's hard to say, but usually when things get this negative, I tend to get a little more positive.
Well, Warren Buffett said it, buy when there's blood in the streets.
Absolutely.
And there's plenty of blood in the streets right now.
Oh, so much. It's
still got, what, 18% down on a 60-40 portfolio?
Yep.
Only one time has it been worse than that in our lifetimes.
And you can guess when that was.
I could, too.
So now the S&P is down under its pre-COVID highs on an inflation-adjusted basis. So we've given up pretty much everything from the last few years on an inflation-adjusted basis, not on a real basis. Right. And pretty much all of the post-2020 election gains are now gone. There's two sectors that are higher than they were pre-election, financials and energy. What are the two sectors that Democrats hate the most?
Would that be financials and energy?
Yeah, a little bit ironic, I thought.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about inflation. It's more or less driving the stock market these days. I mean, technically, it's the Fed's response to inflation that's driving the stock market, but it's all related. And the CPI report on Thursday didn't help things. The headline CPI number was expected to be an increase of 0.2%. Instead, we saw an increase of 0.4%. That translated into a year-over-year reading of 8.2%, which is not good, but it's also down from 9.06% in June. So next month, any print below 0.7% would actually bring the headline number back down in the sevens. Mm-hmm. So that would also make a five-month trend of inflation decreasing on a year-over-year basis. So right now it looks like spring of next year before the Fed reaches their goal of 2-4%. But spring of next year is not that far away. So I just go back to, I think the Fed needs to really evaluate the trend and the direction we're going instead of being completely reactionary as they have been over the last 2 years.
Well, they're talking tough, though. Every day there are more and more Fed members coming out talking tough.
In unison.
Yeah, and that's really hurting any possibility. I wish I could just look them all in the eye one time and say, shut up for a month.
That'd be great.
Wouldn't it? But you might as well forget that. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have, as usual, a trivia question, and sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Kenny at 904-636-7888. Adam said there was a very unusual event that occurred this week, and he was correct. It is very rare that when the market opens in a certain direction, like down, and goes there very fast, the term that we use is gapping. So the market gapped down by over 2%. And by the market, I mean the real market, the S&P 500. But after that reversal, it closed the day more than 2% up from its closing number. That has only happened five times since 1993, and two of them were in the same year. What year was that? Real simple.
All right.
A year since 1993. All right, let's wrap up the talk on the market and we'll move on to fun things.
So you probably felt every bit of this, but the current bear market has lasted 283 days.
Yeah.
It's almost the length of an average bear market, yep, which is 286 days.
However, why does it seem like years?
However, you might be surprised to learn that the average bear market drops 35.1% on the S&P, and the current bear market is only down 25.9%. So why does it feel so much worse than that? There's two reasons. One, the NASDAQ is actually down 34%. So if you own any QQQ or technology fund or
there's any a variety of the major ways component you can own stocks it, yeah, or anything like that,
you would be down about the average amount in a bear market already this year in that portion. So that's not helping. Second is that bonds are hurting you as much as stocks in some cases this year. If you own,
I think that's the real thing.
That I think is the more painful because yeah, typically if you allocate to QQQ,
run, to
you're looking at anywhere, you know, a percent or two to maybe 20%,
yeah,
but your bond allocation could be anywhere from 20 to 60%.
Right.
So, but if you do that via ETF or by mutual fund bond funds like BND or AGG, you're down almost 16% year to date in those funds. If you own LQD, which is an investment grade corporate bond ETF, you're down almost 23%. If you are so unfortunate as to own TLT, the long treasury ETF, you're down over 32% this year. So the bond side of things, that's how you're making a 26% drop feel like a 35% drop.
Yeah. And it's also setting the stage for something that's going to happen one of these days. I can't tell you when. And that's that as soon as the Fed gets this thing under control to a point, you're going to see interest rates stabilizing or even starting to fall. And at that point, and that long bond fund is really, really going to look good.
Yeah, for sure. We also saw a retail sales report this week, and it wasn't great, but not great could be interpreted as good news in this market. The report was flat from last month, meaning consumers didn't increase spending in September. Why is that good news? It sounds like terrible news. Part of the reason inflation has been so hot is that consumers have been spending money like crazy. So the less this number increases, the less the Fed may have to raise rates. Just another crazy way that bad news is good news in this weird market.
That is so true. And it will change. The one thing you can say for sure, and I say pretty much for sure, that a year from now, everything we're talking about is going to be way different than it is today. Will it be way better?
Yeah.
Will it be way worse?
I don't know.
Will it just be different? I don't know. But this is not sustainable. And as the world famous economist said, anything that's unsustainable will stop. Oh, this nonsense, and I do really believe this is nonsense. It's political nonsense. It's market nonsense. It's everything. Every kind of conceivable nonsense. And don't forget that 3 weeks from Tuesday, you can go out there and express an opinion. And if you're not happy with the last 2 years, express it the right way. Maybe you'll help yourself. We'll see. Not my job to tell you how to vote. I just got to ask you to vote and vote your mind.
Remember, I'm not telling you how to vote either, but do remember that the market loves a divided government. Just saying.
Isn't that the truth? All right, lines are open, 904-222-8255. Let's move along to something that is perhaps a bit more fun. You know that I've been following my near obsession, I guess, with Secure 2.0. I got another update, and this one is from a guy that probably nobody out there has heard of, so I won't even bother with that. But he says that the Secure 2.0 should pass after the midterm elections. Well, why not before? Because those people aren't going to work between now and the election. They're out there campaigning. So forget anything getting done that way. Even the January 6th Commission has put off its report until after the midterm. So there's literally nothing going on.
Must not be the news they wanted.
Probably not. Anyway, I wanted to touch on a couple of the points that he says will be in there. And I noticed that this is worded just a little bit differently than the ones I've been reading lately. And it the main one is there have been the two competing proposals for the raise in the required minimum distribution age. One of them was going to jump in 10 years by 3 years. The other one was going to go up right away and then go up every 5 years. Well, it's a little bit different right now. As you know, Secure One moved the RMD age from 70 and a half up to 72, so we don't have to worry about that stupid half-year thing anymore. And he's saying that this proposal that's most likely to pass will increase it to 73. What year? This one's weird.
Don't know.
2022. Not 2023.
Okay.
So if you're in that age, because that takes it back now. If you were born after June 30th, 1948, we should take a good look at that. And if you're not having to take your required minimums right now and you're 72 or 73 this year, you might just drag your feet a little bit. And we will, of course, keep you posted every Saturday until something definitive happens. But then, another little surprise, 74 is delayed until 2029. So if we get a year up front, we have to sacrifice a couple of years for the middle one. Of course, it doesn't impact me. It doesn't impact Adam, but it impacts a lot of people in between. And then finally, in 2032, it goes to 75. So for you younger people who hopefully will stay healthy and get your retirement income set up well so you don't have to dip into these things, you can put it off longer and longer, which will give you a much better chance of success in your long-term financial independence. So that's what he's thinking right now that'll happen. There's also some changes in the catch-up contributions. Secure 2.0 has a subset of older people. The regular catch-up contributions for anyone age 50 and up. But this is for people age 62 to 64. And they would be able to then contribute an additional $10,000 for their catch-up contribution, or if you have a simple IRA, $5,000. Now, nobody has said if that's on top of the current $6,500 or not. I strongly suspect it is not. I suspect it's a substitution. And that's still good. But then there's that other part of the catch-up contributions. You know how Congress has an insatiable desire to, quote, pay for something, and all that ever means is tax somebody. Never means anything else, and you shouldn't think it does. But the way they're going to do it, if this passes, all catch-up contributions are going to be made Roth-style, meaning you can contribute, but you can no longer deduct it from your income. So I could make a small good news argument. Everyone should have a Roth and a regular. That would be that argument. Bad news argument, you can contribute more, but you can't save more taxes. In fact, you won't even be able to save in taxes what you can save today if this goes through.
As long as they don't put an income limit on that, I think I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I can make those arguments. And when they gave us the they took away when you inherit IRAs and
the stretch.
Yeah, the stretch provision, they took that away. But they gave us a 10-year deal. Now, I'm going to talk about this a lot in the next segment because this one's really confusing. But I was okay. And then when they put in the estate tax again after dropping it for a year, they put it in so high that I was okay. I'm not unwilling to look at these things with a bit of logic and say, who's going to get impacted by this? What will impact the greatest number of Americans positively and like that? So nothing I'm saying is carved in stone yet, but this is what the one expert believes is going to happen. And, of course, when it gets closer yet, even before they vote on it perhaps, I'll have more on you. But there are also going to be some changes like the index, things that are not indexed now, the catch-up contributions are legislated, not indexed. They will be indexed. QCD limits, $100,000 a year, they are legislated, but they will be indexed. So we're doing a few more things to keep up with inflation, which is a topic I've been hounding on for quite some time this year because of the bracket creep that so many people are experiencing. And there will be continually more of that if you just keep listening to the show. But that's what's new as of right now. All right, trivia question is still open. We've got to pay some bills for a few seconds, and we'll be back. Don't go anywhere. And then I want to talk about a little bit more of what's going on in the big world of the required minimum distribution, which just gets stranger and stranger and stranger. And it's all because Congress wasn't very thorough when they passed Secure 2.0. You know, anything designed in a rush like they were because of the pandemic, you're going to have some shortfalls. Don't go anywhere. You want to hear this. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I would remind everyone that the trivia question is open. This Thursday, just a couple days ago, we had a very unusual day in the market where the S&P 500 gapped down in the beginning more than 2%. Very suddenly reversed itself. In fact, we went into a one-hour meeting with a client, and it was down hundreds. And at the end of the meeting, we just checked in to see how bad it was, and it was up hundreds.
Yeah,
it was very strange.
Negative 300 to positive 500, I believe.
Just in an hour or less. Wow, it was something. Anyway, that seldom happens. And in fact, since 1993, it's only happened five times. But two of them were in 1 year. What year was that? All right, Adam has a little announcement, public service, that we've been on top of and are going to stay that way until it's passed, and then we'll tell you how much fun it was.
Yeah, so Saturday, November 5th at 8:30 a.m., mark your calendars, make your way out to Nocatee, and come do a little run with us. It's a 5K race or a one-mile walk. It's Joe's Jog for a Cure. And registration is open now at joestrong.org. And the reason that we're doing this is it's actually a charity that is sponsored by a family that we know who lost their son to childhood cancer, leukemia, a very specific type of leukemia. All the proceeds from the race go directly to the lab at St. Jude's that actually researches that specific type of childhood cancer. And it is, leukemia in itself is actually a very survivable childhood cancer, but not this type. So this is the type that they're going to try and figure out.
Yeah, it's a problem when something's kind of rare like that because it doesn't get enough research dollars to advance at the same pace that some of the more common versions of it do. So this one, obviously being a very deadly form.
Yes.
We need a cure.
Yep. And the Carolyn, who is the mother of Joe and my wife Jessica, will be out at the art walk on Friday from 5 to 9 p.m. in the Beaches Town Center. They'll have a little booth set up to get registrations for the race. So if you happen to be down there or are looking for something to do on Friday evening, this would be the place to
go. And where is that?
The Beaches Town Center.
Not the town center?
Beaches Town Center. Yeah.
And where's that?
You don't know where the Beaches Town Center is?
No, I don't get out much.
It's the corner.
Oh, the corner.
The corner.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just so everybody knows, it's the corner.
Yeah.
We all know what the corner is. Anyway, by the way, you don't have to run. You don't have to walk. They'll still take your donation.
Sure. If that's the way you prefer to do it, they'd be happy. And there's sponsorship opportunities if you own a small business and want to get your logo on a t-shirt and get some shout outs on their Instagram and Facebook and all of that. It's a good way to get a little marketing for a good cause.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's something, childhood cancer, you got to care.
Definitely.
Okay. RMDs. It is that time of year. We got to start thinking about this because most people, there are a lot of people, frankly, somewhere between 70% and 80%. People are going to take their RMDs no matter what. Many of them spread it over the whole year because they use it as their income. But there's a lot of us who don't, especially a lot of us that are still working. And what changes will do nothing but accrue to our later lives and or beneficiaries, depending on our longevity. But the new rules are partly interesting for people who have inherited IRAs. Now, in our day jobs as financial planners, we always discuss inheritance as a good news, bad news situation. Bad news, you lost somebody. Good news, you inherited something, which will probably help you have a better retirement. Now, if you have inherited an IRA from a person who died on or after January 1, 2020, the rules have changed. And those rules are not fixed yet. And Adam pointed out, and I must correct myself, I apparently said when Secure 2.0 was passed, I meant, of course, 1.0, because 2.0 has yet to be passed. But in the writing of Secure 1.0 and the throes of the pandemic, there were details that weren't hashed out, and IRS has been dealing with these things with different possibilities and often issuing what I would call very conflicting statements. So we now find out that instead of getting the stretch IRA, we had 10 years to get the money out. That was the bad news. The good news was you didn't have to take it out until the end of 10 years. So you could literally take the entire inheritance and invest it for 10 years. And by then, many of us will have stopped working and you can take it out anytime you want to. But if you want to wait till the end, it could be very much larger, particularly if it's a Roth and then wouldn't be taxed. But that's not what they're saying anymore. So preliminarily, the rule was if the deceased had already begun required minimum distributions, you had to continue them. But it didn't look like you did if the decedent had not reached that age yet. But now we're not even sure of that. So what has happened in the confusion is that IRS issued a new guideline saying that for 2020 and 2021, for starters, if you did not take what you might have been supposed to take under the new rules.
Although they didn't tell you.
They didn't tell you. But they're giving that opportunity back. You do not have to take one this year for 2020 or 2021. Now, if that sounds confusing, you should be on our end of it trying to explain it.
It's only the government could screw something up this bad. Just do the 10-year rule. That was so easy.
It was.
It was fair. It was just do the 10-year rule. Why do you have
to go? And it was something gotten in a barter thing because a lot of people didn't want people to be able to stretch it over their lifetimes. So we traded.
Only like less than 5% of people did that, I think. It was almost no one who did that, which this makes no sense.
Again, no matter how small the sample size of people that are affected by these things, when you're affected, you're really affected.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that this one's so important that is if you didn't take the RMD for 2020 and 2021 and they didn't give you this reprieve, the penalty for not taking them is 50%.
Yeah, which is insane.
50%. So they did the only right thing. They waived it. For those 2 years, there's a really good chance you don't have to take one this year. I think all of this will start up in 2023, but I will be telling you in the interim because if anything changes, you got to know it and you got to do it. So hopefully this will be good news for those people who are affected with their inherited IRAs. Also make our jobs a little bit easier from a purely selfish standpoint. So we'll let you know.
All right, now for the good news.
Yep.
Are you over 62?
Yep.
And do you like having more money?
I haven't thought of that.
Yeah. So
oh, yeah,
most people do. Social Security, I didn't believe that they would actually do it. I thought they would weasel out of it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually are giving a 8.7% increase. The largest in 40 years. And there's 70 million of you out there who are going to get a very large increase in your quote-unquote paycheck January 1st. So, great news.
All right. A couple things on the side of that one. You're also going to receive $5.20 reduction in your Medicare Part B every month.
Now, you can't have said that right, a reduction.
I didn't. Now, the devil's always in the details. The reason you're getting a reduction is because you were overcharged last year and you're not getting that back. So, anyway, you're going to get one. Plus, everybody is getting a reduction of $7 in their out-of-pocket, the deductible on their health plans. Now, it doesn't seem like much, but believe me, if you're living on Social Security, You'll take every $5.20 and every $7 you can get.
No doubt about it.
Now, here's bad news. That's going to up a lot of people's income. So, guess what? A lot of people are going to wind up paying more taxes.
Yeah, but they have more money to do it. So the net effect is still a positive.
Except for that one little thing. And we've been talking about this a lot lately, too. The tax brackets should be indexed to the 8.7%. To be fair, they're giving you an 8.7% raise. They should raise your tax brackets 8.7. I'm going to bet right now, they're not released yet, I'm going to bet right now it doesn't go over 4.
No, probably not.
So you're going to wind up with an additional component of bracket creep this year from that. Okay, now that I put a little water on your parade, let's go back to the good part. You're getting an 8.7% increase, which is the biggest since 1981, I think, where it was about 11%. Bad news again, well, it's all because of inflation. So we could argue this all day long, yeah. But you're getting one. All right, we'll be back to wrap all this up for another segment. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And a reminder, lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is also open. Only five times since 1993 has the S&P index done what it did on Thursday. Dropped down in early morning by more than 2%, ended up in the afternoon at closing above 2%. That's a really big swing. Two times that's happened in 1 year. What 1 year had that happened twice? It isn't this year, by the way, so I narrowed it down for you. How about that? All right, how many of you are going into the end of the year knowing that you have to take an RMD and you're looking at your portfolio saying, oh, God, I'm going to have to sell something that is down and I don't really want to sell it because then I'll have to buy it back again and I got to wait 30 days and all that stuff. You don't have to. If you've got some stock that you have to take out and you don't need the cash to spend, you're just doing this because you absolutely have to, you can distribute the stock, ETF, mutual fund, whatever it is, the asset in your IRA, you can distribute it to yourself in a taxable account and not have to sell it. So if there's something you believe in long term and it's down, then just move it over. And you have to pay taxes on the amount of that gain, but you're going to have to do that no matter what level the stock is at or what you take out of there. So just know that you can do it. You just specify X number of shares so you get it up. IRS rules are very simple. The first money that comes out of an IRA every year is your RMD if you are in the age group where you're required to take money out. So you can't do anything fancy like do a Roth conversion first and then an RMD withdrawal because the rules say what comes out is an RMD. So don't try ever to do a Roth conversion and say, well, I did my RMD that way. That doesn't work. And they will catch you. I promise you they will catch you. But it's just something that everybody should know that there are better ways sometimes to do your RMD than what you might be thinking. I got a couple other things, but I wondered, Adam, do you want to do your millionaire person?
I can if that's the best, if that's what
I could,
makes
the most
sense.
I could do 100 of these
all right,
little
yeah,
ones
I'll
if you
it.
Want to. But
I haven't done one in
very,
a while.
Yeah, and it's very rare that we got a nice segment of time left so you can really get into it.
All right,
so
done.
I thought it might be good.
All right, this is the 19th millionaire I profiled on the show. And this it's really just about sort of realizing the American dream. I've profiled people that came from very little or nothing and mostly through hard work and a little bit of luck. Became millionaires or billionaires, and it just kind of shows that the American dream is still alive despite what some of the political narratives are out there at the current time. So this man grew up poor in the backwoods of Alabama, where his dad worked as a plant manager at a chemical plant. He was born in Maryland, but moved to Demopolis when he was young. The town was so small, his telephone number was a single digit, 5. He was 5.
I like that.
Yeah. He was born an entrepreneur.
That's an intercom.
More or less. And he had his first job at age 5 picking up bottles at baseball games. At 6, he started selling popcorn and peanuts. From those humble beginnings, he attended Yale, where he graduated cum laude with a degree in history. He then got a second BA from Oxford in philosophy, politics, and economics. His first job was on Wall Street with investment bank Dominick & Dominick. He joined the Army in 1966 during the Vietnam War and got out in 1968. He then joined investment bank Arnold and S. I don't know how to pronounce that, Blake Groeder in 1970. At that bank, he met his future business partner, whom he left the firm with in 1973 to form one of the first international hedge funds. From 1973 to 1980, the hedge fund portfolio gained about 4,200%, while the S&P gained about 47%. The global fund was truly a pioneer in investing at the time. In 1980, with his newfound wealth, he and his partner disbanded the fund, and he decided to pursue his passion for travel. He started planning a new adventure, and from 1990 to 1992, he bought a motorcycle and rode 100,000 miles across six continents and wrote a great book about it called Investment Biker. An Investment Biker.
It is a great book.
I've read it twice, actually. An Investment Biker, he predicted the rise of China as a global superpower, the decline of the Soviet Union. He didn't get everything 100% right, as his investments in Bolivia didn't pan out, but many others did. In 1999, the travel bug hit again, and he set out on another world tour, this time in a Mercedes. He traveled through 116 countries and covered 245,000 kilometers. The newest book for this journey was called Adventure Capitalist, and it also became a bestseller. His adventurous personality and investment success has led him to be a guest on many financial shows, including Fox Business, and he was a frequent guest lecturer at Columbia University School of Business. He has written several more books since retiring and currently resides in Singapore with his wife and two young daughters. With a net worth of more than $300 million, Jim Rogers has certainly been successful in the investment world. Most kids from the backwoods of Alabama don't go on to travel the world, much less make a fortune investing in it. Jim combined his desire to see the world and his passion for investing in it to become one of the most interesting millionaires on the planet.
There is one blotch on his image in my...
You can't really fault the man for picking a partner that was that successful. No. Now, what Soros has grown into is something else entirely.
Well, he was smart enough to go separate ways.
Yes, they did call it quits. But
he's something of a curmudgeon in his own right.
Yeah.
But I have... listened to him for many decades.
So have I.
I love the book.
Yep.
And you know, that Investment Biker is still a book that you could consider current because you can see what he predicted, why he predicted it, and what actually happened.
And a lot of it he got spot on.
He did.
He saw the investments that China was making in their infrastructure and the entrepreneurial spirit and the people, despite being a communist country. And he said, this is a place that is going to succeed. And you can't argue with that. They have succeeded.
One of his other things that I really liked was he would gauge how successful a country was going to be by how hard it was to get in there. If it were a bureaucratic nightmare that where everybody had to get their palms greased, then he wrote it off. I wouldn't invest there for anything. But if it was orderly, the paperwork was in order, you get in, you stay there, go through, get out, and everything was fine, then he'd look at spending some serious money there.
If the people in the country wanted to show you what they were doing, what they were working on, how entrepreneurial they were, what they had started, that was considered a good thing. And it really worked out. But still, from 1973 to 1980, gaining 4,200% in your hedge fund, that's incredible.
Yeah, he was a big commodities guy, too. He loved commodities. And, you know, they're not always in vogue, but sometimes they are. Very interesting. All right, Department of Labor's coming after your gig jobs again, people. They just won't let this one go. They're trying very hard in this administration to make everybody a W-2 employee, every chance they get. So if you are working the gig economy, in other words, if you're a 1099 person, watch for this. If there's a chance to comment to your congressman or whatever, tell them, no, we need our independence to do what we do the same way Adam does, the same way I do, the same way the real estate people
do. Same way Uber drivers do, the same way DoorDash people do it.
Computer programmers who take on gigs from big companies for a few weeks or a few months at a time. This economy, the gig economy, is absolutely vital to our national economy.
Especially young people do not want this. They want to work, in many cases, want to work when they want to work. It's a new sort of lifestyle and a way of defining how you want to do things. And it's very, very popular in the younger generation. And it makes a lot of sense. I think to some degree, they're showing older people how that can be done. And older people like me and you are starting to do it that way too.
Yeah. And you know, what do you get? What reward do you get for being your own self-employed person? Instead of only paying 6.15% in your Social Security, you get to pay 15.3% overall.
It's true. But you get
you
to decide
save
when
so much more money. Well,
and you get to decide when you work and what your hours are and what job you want to do that day. I mean, there are people who drive Uber and do the work for the shopping apps, Instacart, mm-hmm. and on any given day might do one or the other based on what they feel like.
And that's how they go to an area that they know.
Yeah.
At a time they know the demand is going to be there. They work hard and make some money, and then they get out.
And then when they're done, because they want to go pick up their kid or go out to eat or whatever it is, or go to the gym. It's just a different way of looking at things, and it works for them. And the government should not have any say on whether or not that is appropriate.
Exactly. All right, I'm giving you all some homework. I want you to look up a company called Strive Asset Management out of Ohio. The owner's name is an interesting fellow named Vivek Ramaswamy, which I think is the greatest name ever. I want you to look it up, and I'm going to tell you why next week, because he's doing something that's against the grain of a lot of companies that we don't like.
That year was 2008.
And it usually, like 80% of the time, it happens very near the end of the downturn. The first one was early in 2008, which proved not to be very close to the end. So, little point of interest. All right, see you next week, same time. Thanks for listening. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.